An excellent day for an exorcism.
I understand, all right. You're one of the undead, and I'm a werewolf.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Hey, Patsy! No running in the hallway.
Hey there everybody, welcome to episode number 68 of the Horror Crypt Podcast, and today I have got, as far as I'm concerned, an extremely, extremely controversial movie. Now this movie was released back in 1978, and I need to read the synopsis of for you, at least that way you can understand exactly what sort of movie I'm going to be doing today. So I'm going to be doing the 1978 movie I Spit on Your Grave. Now it's originally titled Day of the Woman. It's a American rape and revenge horror film. Now, this is where, you know, I'm directing towards the women of my audience to say that this movie is where you basically have this poor woman that goes through a lot, but the revenge is sweet. So you don't have to worry about sitting there getting all upset about what the guys go through at the end, because they absolutely and utterly deserve it. The film tells the story of Jennifer Hills, Camille Keaton, that's her character, a fiction writer based in New York who exacts revenge on each of her tormentors after the four men gang rape and leave her for dead. This film is noted for its controversial depiction of extreme graphic violence, particularly the lengthy depiction of gang rape that takes 30 minutes of the film. Unfortunately, that's the 30 minutes of the film's running time is the gang rape scene, which is, it's an extremely hard watch to watch, as I'm saying. During its wider release, it was branded a nasty video, or it was called Video Nasty, I should say, in the United Kingdom, and was a target of censorship by film commissioning bodies. As such, film critic Roger Ebert became one of the most notable detractors of the film, calling it a vile bag of garbage. The film remains highly controversial to this day, even being considered to be one of the worst films ever made. I don't believe it's the worst film ever made. The acting is very, very, very subpar. It is not Academy Award winning by any stretch of the imagination. The sound is, I mean, the sound's good, but it's just, you know, there's, I mean, I'll get more into it, but really the acting is very, very low budget B grade, you know, sort of like thing. I think it's basically, you know, someone decided in 1978, let's make a movie that's controversial. They came up with this one. It was released on the 22nd of November, 1978, and it goes for 102 minutes. There are times that it does feel like 102 minutes. It drags just a little bit too much. The budget was $1.5 million. I've got no idea what it made at the box office, because they didn't include that one, so unfortunately I can't tell you, but it's definitely not the worst film ever made. For some, it is the controversy which has led to it being deemed a cult classic. Despite the controversy and negative reviews, the performance of Camille Keaton was praised by critics. In 2010, the film was included in Time Magazine's top 10 ridiculously violent movies. Yeah, well, as I said, this movie is extremely graphic and extremely violent. You can watch it, I think, on YouTube. I can't be 100% sure, but you can actually find it, obviously, somewhere. You can buy it at eBay or whatever. But make sure you get the, if you're going to buy it, make sure you get the 1978 version, because there is a remake, the 2010 remake, which has since spawned two sequels of its own. I Spit on Your Grave 2 in 2013. I Spit on Your Grave 3, Vengeance is Mine in 2015. A director sequel, I Spit on Your Grave Deja Vu, which was released in 2019. And, of course, the director and Keaton both returning. In her memoir, Inside Out, Demi Moore confirmed that she is the scantily clad woman on the film's poster posing with her back turned. So I didn't realise that you're getting to see Demi Moore. Hey, you know. But, look, as I said, this is a very, very aggressive movie. It's a very graphically violent movie. If you want to sit down and watch it, just be aware of that. I do not, absolutely do not recommend any children to see this movie. So please, if you are going to watch this movie, make sure your children are well and truly out of the house, in bed or whatever. But do not expose them to this movie. It is extremely, extremely graphically violent. And as I said, the acting is not the best. The storyline, yeah, it's a hit and miss storyline. It's an extremely cold open. And when I say cold open, it is just frigidly cold. You know, it is so ice cold, it's not funny. The music, yeah, you know, the most annoying part about this movie, and not so much the most annoying part, I think it's one of those parts of the movie where you know some shit's going to go down, is when you hear the motorboat. There's the constant motorboat motor that you'll see, that you'll hear. They drive it around the lake because the house actually backs onto a lake. Or onto a river, you hear the motorboat, you know that some shit's going to go down. So that's one of the most, you know, eerie things about this movie. The other parts of the movie is just, it's just graphically violent for graphic violence sake. But it does have a rather interesting, you know, revenge at the end, which is very, very sweet as far as I'm concerned. Even I sat there and went, yes, all right. I mean, I do not absolutely condone, you know, aggressive sexual attacks in any way, shape, or form. So please don't think I agree with that one. I certainly do not. I absolutely cheered at her with what she did to the guys in revenge. And I did see the 2010, the remake of the movie, I Spit on Your Grave. They've got some awesome kill scenes there. Very inventive ones, too. I actually have to go and buy that one because I really want to do the remake. I don't know. I can't remember whether it's exactly like this, like almost shot for shot. But I know that there are some very, very interesting kill scenes in the remake of I Spit on Your Grave. Look, before we get started, remember I'm always on social media. I'm Facebook, Horror Crypt Oz, and I'm at on a direct message, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. And remember, once a month, I am on YouTube. So you can come and visit me at the Horror Crypt Podcast on YouTube. You can sit down and watch me for however long I'm there reviewing a movie. And yeah, you can leave reviews for me. You can leave messages for me. And, you know, you never know. One day you might be able to join me on a maybe on a Zoom call. We can record it together and put it up, and you can might be a co-host for that episode. Who knows? But anyway, before we get started on this movie, we love to listen to the trailer. Now, this trailer goes for a little bit long. It goes for just over 2 minutes 50. So, you know, bear with it. That's the shortest one that I found. There was one that goes for like 3 minutes 57, and I'm like, holy crap, that's basically showing you the entire movie. Why would you ever want to see the movie when you can watch an enormously long trailer on YouTube? But anyway, this one is about 2 minutes 20, 2 minutes 50, something like that. It's the shortest one I could find, seriously. But anyway, before we get started, let's listen to the trailer of I Spit on Your Grave.
Take off your clothes.
I don't like women giving me orders.
I spit on your grave. What you are about to see did happen. I spit on your grave. This woman will soon cut, chop, break, and burn 5 men beyond recognition. And there isn't a jury in this country that will convict her.
Here, I'll give you something to remember for the rest of your life.
I spit on your grave.
Relax.
Oh, yeah.
I'll make you feel like you've never felt before.
God bless your hands.
Wait till you feel this.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic.
No. No, not that.
I spit on your grave.
I'm scared you, didn't I?
What do you want?
It's you I want.
Thank you.
So as I said, this movie starts with a very, very cold open, and I say very cold open because we basically see there's a car parked out the front of a building, and there's a guy putting some luggage into her car. She gets in the car and just starts driving off. We can see that it's New York because you've got the Twin Towers in the background, and it basically just comes up with "I spit on your grave." And basically we just follow her driving further and further out to the countryside, and it's basically, we understand that this woman by the name of Jennifer Hills, she lives in Manhattan, and she rents an isolated cottage in Kent, Connecticut, near the Hudsonic River in the Litchfield countryside, to write her first novel. So basically she's just going out there because she just wants to get away with writing her first novel. And I guess the best part about it is just, you know, you just get away from everything. And of course there's no cell phones back then, you know, no real distractions. So, you know, rent a nice, you know, cottage for the summer to go out there and write your first novel. And, you know, and it's interesting, they say it's her first novel, but it's found out that it's not her first novel, it's just a novel that she's going to write, because she is a noted writer. She actually comes across a person who, you know, she says, oh, well, you might not know my name, I go by another name, but, you know, I'm writing my novel. So anyway, we basically see that she's, you know, driving out to the countryside, and we find that it's a gorgeous place, and we get to see our very first naked shot. Now this naked shot I'd say within the first maybe 7 minutes of the movie. So, you know, she pulls up out the front of this rather beautiful cottage in the middle of nowhere, well, guessing middle of nowhere, and there's a lake in, when I say lake, there's a river in front of her, you know. And so she decides to get butt naked, and of course we get to see the 1978 Bush that's sitting there staring back at us. Hey, I'm all, whether you want to go a la natural or you want to go completely, you know, Brazilian, I don't care, it's all good with me. But anyway, we get to see this, and she jumps into the water and has a bit of a splash around, and, you know, just maybe just cooling off. It might be a very hot day, she's just cooling off. Anyway, we then get to see her, she's putting all the stuff away into her drawers, and she comes across a handgun. Now, we don't know whether this handgun was hers or whether it was someone had left it there. We're not sure, but anyway, we find that there's a handgun there. Well, that's not going to play a big role in anything right at this moment. So the arrival of an attractive, independent young woman attracts the attention of Johnny, a gas station manager, because as she's coming in, you know, she's seeing, she needs some gas, and she basically sees him, and he's very personable. He just comes across as just someone that's being very helpful, and she looks over and sees two guys, Stanley and Andy, and they're unemployed, and they're basically playing the game of you throw a knife into the ground, and then, you know, wherever you're standing, you try and reach and see how far you can actually throw it before someone falls over, and then, of course, you win the game. Very much similar to April Fool's Day, the movie that we did a little while ago, where you throw the knife into the ground and see how far you can stretch to keep to getting it. So basically she's just sitting there watching this, and anyway, nothing really happens. She jumps in the car and drives off. Jennifer has her groceries delivered by Matthew Duncan, who is mildly mentally disabled. He's a really interesting sort of guy, you know. I don't know, there's parts of him that you think is very, he's very childlike in that regard. He's a grown man, but he's very mentally, you know, he's just not there. He's got, you know, the baseball card and the spokes to make his bike sound, his, you know, pedal bike sound more, you know, like Harley Davidson. And, you know, he basically goes into her house and says, oh, you know, I've delivered here before. Because she says, wow, you were fast getting here. And he goes, oh, I've delivered here before to the previous owners. And, you know, he basically says, oh, you know, where are you from? And she said, oh, you know, Manhattan. He goes, oh, New York. And she says, yeah, here's a tip from a nasty New Yorker. It's just basically just, you know, playful banter backwards and forwards. And she says that she's here to write a novel. And he basically has that, oh, would I know you? You know, and she's like, you wouldn't know me. I write under another name. So anyway, he just you know, disappears back onto his bike, and she's very, you know, accommodating to him and waves him goodbye. And so he basically rides back to the other three men and reports back to them about how beautiful the woman that he met was, and that he saw her breasts. Well, he claims he saw her breasts. So Stanley and Andy start cruising by the cottage in their boat and prowl around the house at night time. Now, this is that motorboat, that continuous bloody engine. Because whenever you hear this engine, you know they're up to no good. They really are. At one stage, you know, she's just laying back in a hammock, just, you know, writing a piece of her novel, just sitting there, just not doing anything. And you see Stanley and Andy just cruise past. Of course, they're watching her from afar, and one of them waves at her, and she you know, being neighborly and being, you know, a nice person, she waves back. So they turn the boat around. They're basically just doing, you know, like the continuous water donuts in the front, just trying to impress her, I guess, but keeping a very close eye on her. And she's just like, okay, guys, yeah, all right, you've had your fun. Just keep going. You know, you don't need to be here. And they're just making a huge fucking noise. And it's just like, get the fuck away from me, morons. You know, it's just, I swear to God, you want to bitch slap these guys. Because they really are. They're no hopers. They're just not doing anything. They're hanging around, you know, continuously with Johnny, who's the manager of the gas station. And he's really just there. You know, I guess it's a very, very part-time sort of job. But these other two are just, yeah, they're just not doing anything. And they're dressed very much like the old, you know, hick sort of situation. One of them's got a pair of pants with, like, a set of overalls. That, you know, with no top on them, no shirt. The other guy's just wearing a pair of pants, no shirt. So it must be one of those movies, two movies in a row where guys just wear pants and no shirt. I don't know what the attraction is, but hey, what the hell? If you want to do it, go ahead, whatever. So anyway, we're basically seeing that they're just, you know, reporting back to Johnny about this woman that's just laying out, you know, in the hammock, just not doing a whole lot. And you just know that suddenly there is something that's going to be, something that's really going to be a bad idea for her. And, you know, they're prowling around the house at night time. She hears a noise. She goes out to see if she can see anything. And, of course, the light only goes so far from the porch, so she can't see that, you know, if anybody's there watching her. But, you know, something is really going to happen, unfortunately. So one day, the men attack Jennifer. She realizes that they are planning her abduction so Matthew can lose his virginity. So this is, you know, she's basically on a, she's in her little boat. There's like a little canoe that she's laying in the middle of the lake with, you know, on the middle of the river. And of course, we also realize that Johnny and Stanley and Andy, they're basically the instigators of trying to get Matthew to lose his virginity. And they're saying, you know, you're gonna die a virgin, you know, and they want him to get laid. Matthew, because he is mentally disabled, he assumes that they are his friends, but of course they're not. You know, they're basically just there to make fun of him. And so it really comes down to, we've got to get Matthew laid. And Matthew, you know, he's got the mind of a child. He doesn't really understand really what's going on. But the other three have got a fair idea that here's an idea. I think we'll go and get her. So Andy and Stanley are, you know, cruising in their motorboat and see her laying in the middle of the river just in her canoe, and start to do donuts around her. And she can see that, you know, they're trying to do her harm, and she's trying to swat them off with one of the oars. Unfortunately, one of them grabs a hold of the rope that's actually at the front of the canoe, and they basically tow her as far as they can down river, to the point where they can actually start to attack her. She basically fights back, but the three men rip her bikini off and hold her. Matthew refuses to rape Jennifer out of respect and pity for her, so Johnny is the first person. He's the one that starts it all. So, you know, he's ripped her bikini off and ripped her top off, ripped her bottom off. Because at this stage, you know, she's gotten out of the boat and she's running. And you could hear it in the trailer, you know, the hooting and the calling and the whistling, and, you know, basically trying to scare the shit out of her, which you would be absolutely terrified at this stage. So she's running through, you know, to try to get away from them. And this is when, you know, Johnny comes out of some tall grass and knocks into her and knocks her down on the ground. This is when he rips her top off and she tries to fight back. He manages to grab a hold of her legs and rips her bikini bottoms off. And the other guys basically hold her legs and hold her arms. And of course, you know, this is when Johnny is saying to Matthew, you know, okay, if you're not going to do it, if you're not going to, you know, rape her, then just come over here and hold her leg. So basically, you've got, you know, one guy holding both of her arms, and the other guy's one holding either one of her legs. This is when Johnny, you know, rapes her in the tall grass. He finishes, gets up, and, you know, leaves her. You know, that's fine. It was all good. And they just walk away slowly. This is where it's very, very confronting, this scene. And as I said, this scene goes on for 30 minutes, so it's a very hard movie to watch. So she gets up and she is walking, trying to find her way back to her cabin, back to sanctuary. And she comes across an open wooded area that's got some rocks around the place. And as she's walking through, you know, because she's been beaten and she's, you know, blood all over the place, she comes across And I think it was Andy. If I remember, Andy is sitting on a rock and he's playing a harmonica. And it's like, oh God. And she's walking out and she sees him and she basically freezes right where she is. And she's like, oh shit. And of course, then she hears a noise and we see that Johnny is basically standing next to a tree, you know, a couple of feet away from her. She hears another sound, and now we've got one of the other guys, which is Stanley. He's actually sitting a little bit further away from her, and then we see Matthew, who's hiding behind a tree. She tries to run away again, and this is when Andy reaches, launches the attack on her, and basically they grab a hold of her, and they push her over a rock, but this time she's facing down. And now, I don't know whether he anally rapes her or whether he vaginally rapes her, but he rapes her to a point where she absolutely lets out a blood-curdling scream. And when I'm saying Andy is raping her, he is doing some weird-ass sex moves. It's almost, I don't know. It's very, very hard to describe. It's just, it's just not natural. I don't know. I don't know what the actor, his whole idea of doing this, but it just doesn't seem natural. It's very, very strange. But anyway, we don't know whether it's an anal rape or whether it's a vaginal rape, but they rape her anyway. And they absolutely go to town on her. You know, he, you know, hits her across the back of the head. He's hitting her on the on her back while he's raping her. This is when, you know, Stanley's holding her down. Matthew's holding her down again. Johnny's holding her down while Andy is raping her. Very, very hard part to watch, unfortunately. She crawls back to her house, so, you know, they basically let her go, and she's just, you know, she's just done. She's just done in. And they basically just, you know, zip up themselves, and they just walk away, just all nice and casual. And she gets up, and she walks away, you know, walks back to her house. She gets into her house, and she basically finds a T-shirt or a shirt that she can put on just to cover herself up. And you see her basically making her way in the house. She's crawling along the rug trying to get to the phone. She dials the first, I'm guessing, zero for the operator, and then you see a boot come from the right hand side of the screen, and here we go again. They attack her again in the house. Now it's this time they basically are really pushing Matthew to rape her, and it's just he's just not playing ball. It's only until one of the guys gives him some alcohol that he drinks the alcohol, and he suddenly gets up the Dutch courage to rape her. And he does. He starts raping her while she's laying there. But he actually gets upset that he can't come because there are people that are watching him. It's at this stage that we see one of the last guys, which is Stanley, and he basically goes over to her and he tries to put his dick in her mouth, and she won't do it. So he basically beats the shit out of her, kicks her, punches her, and it gets to the point where Johnny, the leader of this group, actually pulls him off of her and says, that's enough. And he's got the little catchphrase of suck it, bitch, and he is beating the shit out of her. And it's, you know, unfortunately Matthew again is starting to be very, very, we shouldn't be doing this, and basically puts his clothes on, puts his hat on, and they basically walk out. The other men ridicule her book and rip up the manuscript as Stanley violently sexually assaults her. And they, when I say violently, he is probably one of the most aggressive. He doesn't vaginally rape her. I don't know whether he just wants, I don't know what he wants to do, but he just wants to beat the shit out of her. And I guess one of the added bonuses would be, I'm putting my dick in your mouth. Now, as far as a woman goes, someone puts that in your mouth, you'd probably bite it off, or bite down on it very, very hard, which, hey, 100% go for it, because absolutely agree with that. But that was a very, very hard part of the movie to watch, for the simple fact that she was getting the shit kicked out of her. You know, he'd punched her in the face, in the back, wherever there was a possibility of her getting hit, he was doing it. So it's a very confrontational scene. And they rip up her book, her manuscript, and they basically just leave. She passes out, and Johnny realizes that she is a witness to the crimes and orders Matthew to go back and murder her. And they basically say to Matthew, listen, take this knife and basically plunge it into her heart, into her chest. And basically Johnny is saying, you know, this is where you need to do it. And Matthew, being mentally disabled, he is more likely to go and do it. The other guys are like, nah, fuck it. I'm not going to get my blood on my hands. I'm not going to be the person that kills her. So you better go and do it, Matthew. And because Matthew believes that they are his friends, he decides, okay, I'll go and kill her. I think we need to do that because, yeah, as you know, Johnny says, she's a witness because we raped her. She could go to the police, so we want to get rid of her. Bad idea. So Matthew goes back into the house, and Matthew can't bring himself to stab her, so he dabs the knife in her blood and then returns to the other men, claiming that he has killed her. Now, he basically just wipes some blood, because she had a whole lot of blood on the side of her mouth. So he wipes basically either side of her mouth on either side of the knife, so that way we've got an indication that, yep, I did it. I plunged it into her chest, and she's dead. He gets back to the boat, and the other guys are like, oh, well done, Matthew. Good work. Fantastic. You know, and they basically just hear the motorboat drive off. That motorboat engine is probably one of the most annoying parts of this movie. As I said, the acting is not, it's not stellar. It's not a wonderful bit of acting. It's just acting. That's a very loose way of saying acting, but it's a B-grade movie, so you can't expect too much. So in the following days, a traumatized Jennifer pieces both herself and her manuscript back together. She goes to church and asks for forgiveness for what she plans to do. We don't know what she's going to do. The first thing we see is that when she's in the bath trying to wash herself down. She's got cuts and bruises on her face. You see her laying in bed with ice packs on her trying to recuperate. So basically over the course of, I think it was like 3 weeks, she's basically piecing herself back together again. I think maybe it's 2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks because at one stage, one of the scenes we go back to is the guys, they're sitting in an ice cream shop, and they're basically all sitting around talking about the fact that, man, we've had, 2 weeks of 90 degrees. Do you know what it does to what that would do to a body of 90 degrees? And of course, Matthew says, well, it would bloat up and it would start decomposing and he's like, yeah. And he says, and nobody's seen anything. You know, the smell, you could smell it from 100 feet away. You know, and he's like, yep, yeah, okay. And of course, Matthew goes, well, maybe she went down into the basement where there's no air and died down there. So none of the guys are returning to the house just to investigate, because as even one of the guys says, well, I'm not going back to the house, because if I go back there, there's a good chance that the police might be there and I'm returning to the scene of the crime. So as I said, we see Jennifer at the church and she says, please forgive me. And basically walks out of the church. And once again, it's the curiosity kills the cat, because we've got two of the guys, Andy and Stanley, and they're on their little boat and they go basically just driving up the river to see what's going on. And we suddenly see that Jennifer is laying in her hammock watching them go past. These guys must have thought they saw a ghost, because they basically are watching her so intensely as they're driving past. And she's got that look on her face, which I would have too, which is, you fucking come near me, I'm going to kick your asses and rip your balls off, goddammit. So the men learn that Jennifer has survived and beat the shit out of Matthew for deceiving them. Poor old Matthew has to hightail it out of there. And of course, this is when the main guy, I can't remember his name. It's terrible when you have a brain fart. And you got Johnny. And Johnny basically says, don't you ever fucking come back here again, Matthew, you hear me? And he basically hightails it on his bike. The next scene we see is that Matthew, he works in a grocery store. He just basically packs shelves. And he's got, a cut lip and a black eye. And he's really been worked over. And, of course, Jennifer calls the grocery store and orders, some food, knowing that Matthew will deliver it. The lady at the grocery store says, oh, Matthew, can you deliver it to such and such an address? And he's got that look on his face like, no. No, I don't want to go there. Can I stay here? So basically, you've got the grocery bag sitting on the counter, and he walks over to it, and he walks back away from it, and he walks over there again, and he walks back away from it. He's like, I don't want to do this. So you see that, Matthew is riding his bike up the hill back to Jennifer's house. And this is when Jennifer, who's now fully healed but is ready to kick ass, is wearing a very long flowing white dress. And she sees Matthew come up, and she calls out his name, and he basically sees her, and she lures him down to the water. And it's at this stage that, he's taken the groceries, but he's also taken a knife with him. So at the cabin, Jennifer entices him to have sex with her under a tree. Now, the way she does it is that, he comes over, and he's got the knife, and she says, I'll give you something to, you know, remember. And he says, I've got no friends now. Everybody in the town doesn't like me. I've got no friends. And she's like, I thought we were friends, Matthew. And he goes, yeah, but I've got no friends. They don't like me. This is what you've done. I'm sorry. I need to kill you. And she's like, that's okay, Matthew. This time you will kill me. It's okay. And so she starts to basically, you know, go over to him and, you know, kisses his neck and basically drops down to his, you know, basically his crotch area. So it is basically like you think that she's going to go in for a blowjob. But, of course, she lays down and lowers him onto her. And then, of course, you can see that Matthew is in the middle of having sex. As he is having sex with her, she basically puts a rope around his neck and hangs him from a tree until the point that he basically strangles himself to death. And is killed, and then she then drops his body into the lake. So I was like, all right, one down, we got three to go. Awesome. So at the gas station, Jennifer seductively directs Johnny to enter her car. So she pulls up, and you don't see her, you just hear a car pulling up, and Johnny is walking out, locking up for the day, and he says, you know, I'm sorry, ma'am, you know, the gas station is closed, we're only here on half days. And you suddenly see that she's sitting in the driver's side, and he basically is motioned, she motions him to get in the car, and they drive off to a very secluded area. He gets out of the car, and this is when he says, oh, what did you want me to do, open the door for you as well? Well, she gets out with a handgun, and she points the gun at him and orders him to remove all his clothing, because Johnny basically says, I don't want, you know, I don't like women telling me what to do. She fires the gun into the ground. It's this stage he decides, oh, I better get all my clothes off. And he insists that the rapes were all her fault because she enticed the men by parading around in revealing clothing. What a crock of fucking shit. I'm sorry. That is absolute garbage. She was laying in a hammock and she was laying, you know, sunning herself in a canoe in the river. Exactly at what point was she enticing them? But Johnny is so delusional that he says that this is all her fault. Hey, guess what? You were the one that did it. So she pretends to believe this, and he says, listen, and because he, you know, when she orders him to take off his clothes, he's like, you don't have to order me. I'll do it willingly. No problems at all. But, you know, he basically is talking to her, and she plays along the lines of, oh, yeah. Yeah, it was my fault. I shouldn't have been wearing the bikinis. I shouldn't have been laying there relaxing. Yeah, it was all my fault. So she entices him to basically come back. I'm laughing because it's rather a confronting sort of scene. So she entices him to come back to her cottage for a hot bath. And, you know, like she's just sitting, he's in the bath and he's nice and warm. And she basically starts talking about, oh, you know, I saw your wife at the gas station, because she'd been basically casing the joint and watching him from afar. And she says, oh, so, you know, how long have you been married? And he goes, oh, I don't know however many years they've been married. And she said, oh, have you got children? He goes, yeah, I've got a girl and a boy. And she's like, oh, okay. And he goes, I don't want to talk about my family, you know. And so she just sits in the bath with him. She's butt naked. She sits in the bath with him and basically starts to, you know, make him feel good and starts washing him down. Girls, you'll love this scene. You will really love this scene. So she starts masturbating him. When Johnny mentions that Matthew had been reported missing, Jennifer states, just out of the blue, that she killed him. And it's like, oh, and he's like, oh, you did not. And she said, yeah, I did. I hung him by a tree, and then I dropped him into the river, and now he's decomposing at the bottom of the river. And he's like, oh, you've got an incredible imagination. And she said, do you know what? He actually came before he died. And he's like, you've got such a weird sense of humor. And we see her hand at this stage reaching to the side of the bath. And there is a yellow, I guess, towel on the bathroom floor. She moves it over and she pulls out the knife that Matthew had brought with him. So as she is, you know, states that she had killed him, as he nears orgasm. So, you know, there she is masturbating him in the bath, nice and warm, very relaxing. I'm getting close to coming. She takes the knife Matthew brought with him and severs Johnny's genitals. Yes. Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. Because he's saying, oh, that's fantastic. That feels good, whatever. And then she severs, you know, his genitals. And he's like, that feels so good. It's painful. And she gets up and she stands out of the bath and gets out of the bath, and you see this squirt of blood, and this is when he goes, oh no, you didn't. And she basically throws the knife into the sink, puts on her bathrobe and walks out and locks the door behind her. So he's now basically trapped in the bathroom, bleeding to death. And he's yelling, you know, please help me. It won't stop bleeding. It won't stop bleeding, you know. And he's, you know, you can hear him thrashing around, trying to get out, trying to save himself. And she's just basically listening to, I think it's like Mozart or whatever, but she's listening to some music on the record player while he's basically bleeding to death, which is awesome. She leaves the bathroom, locks the door, and listens to the classical music as Johnny screams, bleeding to death. After he dies, she comes into the bathroom and she starts cleaning up the massive amounts of blood all in the bath. And now it's at this stage that she starts burning his clothes. Now, I don't think burning your clothes in a fire would actually make you look red, but obviously it's to enhance the fact that she's killed him, and it's more dramatic that every time she throws some clothes in there, you know, she basically turns red. So it's basically like a demonic sort of thing. But she is well and truly killed him. The next scene you see, he's basically laying on the bathroom floor, and he is as white as Casper the Ghost. I mean, he is white, but he's got, you know, specks of blood all over him, but he is bled to death very, very quickly. Now, the way that he actually was overpowered like this is because she had relaxed him to such a degree in the hot bath that when she cut him, he didn't feel it to begin with, you know. But it's that situation. It's almost like the age-old thing of, you know, putting a frog into some water and then heating it up gradually, the frog will boil to death. Well, that's the same way as this situation. She had relaxed him to such a degree in a warm or hot bath that when she cut him, you know, he started to bleed immediately, but he didn't actually feel the initial cut. So very, very smart on her behalf, 100%. So after he dies, she dumps the body in the basement and burns his clothes in the fireplace. As I said, every time she throws the clothes into the fireplace, there's an enormous glow of red. So it really shows you that she is, as you know, doing that. We're now coming down to the very last two, Stanley and Andy. They learn that Johnny is missing, and they take their boat to Jennifer's cabin. Once again, the motorboat. This is, whenever you hear this motorboat, you're like, oh, for God's sakes, here they come again. They just, you know, they should actually learn to just get the fuck away from this woman. Andy goes ashore with an axe. Jennifer swims out to the boat and pushes Stanley overboard. Which is very interesting, because obviously it's a situation where Stanley can't swim because he's thrashing about in the water, and she jumps in the motorboat and she basically starts, you know, the motorboat and starts doing donuts around him and basically drives off and comes back and drives off. It's a very, very long scene of basically just, you know, instigating what she's going to do. So Andy swims out to rescue Stanley, but Jennifer plunges the axe into Stanley's back, killing him. How does she do that? Well, at one stage, as Andy swims out to actually get to get her, she basically comes near him and he goes to swat her with the axe, but it misses and it basically lands in the boat and she drives away with the axe. So there's Stanley saying, Andy, please come and save me, help me. So this is when he swims out and of course she comes, you know, flying along with the boat and basically pulls the axe out and straight into his back, killing him, and he, you know, obviously goes into the river and he's dead. Which is a very interesting scenario and a very interesting scene, because it's very, very quick, straight into the back and then he's dead. So it's like, okay, fair enough. So Stanley moves towards the boat to grab hold of the motor to climb aboard, begging Jennifer not to kill him, because obviously he can't swim. He's got, you know, and of course, this is when she repeats the order he made to her during the sexual assault. She looks at him and goes, "Suck it, bitch," and then starts the motor, disemboweling him with the propeller as she speeds away. The movie fades to black, and that is the end of the movie. Yes, it ends that quickly. As I said, there's not a huge, great amount of dialogue in this movie. That's more basically the revenge. And she doesn't say a whole lot as far as the revenge situation. I mean, she talks a little bit to Johnny, a little bit to Matthew. These two, she talks a little bit, but not a huge amount of dialogue. So really, it basically just comes down to, I'm going to kick your ass every which way but Sunday, basically. But, you know, it's that scenario. And it's a very, very confronting movie. It's a movie that I, you know, if you... Yeah, it's sometimes it's very, very hard to watch. It really is. Now, giving a scale of 0 to 5 buckets of blood, 0 being it's a, how do I get the last 102 minutes of my life back? to 5. It was a perfect movie and I'd watch it all over again. I'm not going to give it a 5. No way. It's a B-grade movie at best. As it said, it was branded a video nasty in the United Kingdom, and they know what they're talking about because it is rather a B-grade movie. It is what it is. It's very quickly shot. I don't know how long it took them. I might find that in the fun facts. But look, 0 to 5 buckets of blood, I'm going to give it a Jesus. I'm not going to give it a Jesus. I'm going to give it like a 2.5. I don't know what I'm really giving it a 2.54. It's a movie you could just stick on. I don't know. I don't know. 2.5. It's not a great movie. I'm just going to go with 2.5. I've really got no real reference of why it's 2.5. I've got to give it some sort of score, but 2.5 out of 5. Before we finish, we have to do Paul's Fun Facts. So this movie's actually got a fair amount of good trivia, and rather interesting the little bits of trivia that I've read so far. So all 4 male actors asked to appear naked in the film to remove awkwardness or embarrassment about their own nudity and to show solidarity for Camille Keaton, who spends much of the film nude. So that's a really great little bit of solidarity for the female star, just to show that, hey, you know, you're not the only one that has to get naked throughout this movie. So, you know, kudos to them. Well done. The film was originally released in 1978 with the title Day of the Woman. It was poorly received at the box office. In 1980, distributor Jerry Gross renamed it I Spit on Your Grave after a 1959 French drama and re-released it. This time, the film received more publicity and became a key target of Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel's campaign against films featuring women in danger. Okay, that's sounds all right. But you know what? It was what it was in 1978. So it really shows you that the next two little bits of trivia I'm going to say really shows you what sort of movie this really was. So one crew member quit during the filming of the second rape scene. He simply couldn't stomach any more violence. The film's makeup artist quit the film halfway through. She had been gang raped and couldn't bear to relive the horror of her attacks, even though she was aware of the film's plot before agreeing to work on it. So, you know, the PTSD that she went through, she was reliving it through the movie. This is how believable these scenes were, and it was very, very confronting. This film features the longest rape scene in the film history, roughly 25 minutes. So that's how interesting, you know, this was as far as how spot on they got this movie. It was an incredibly hard movie to watch. So it really shows you also where sometimes real life encroaches on movies. Now the film's director, Mir Zarachi, said that he was inspired to make the film after helping a young woman who had been raped. He said he, a friend, and his daughter were driving by a park where they saw a young woman crawl bloodied and naked out of the bushes. They picked up the girl and took his daughter back home and talked with a friend about whether they should take the girl to hospital or to the police. They decided to take her to the police first. The police officer, who Zarachi described as not fit to wear the uniform, insisted she answer questions about her assailants before she went to the hospital, even though her jaw was broken and she could barely talk. Finally, Zarachi insisted to the officer that they take her to the hospital right away. He later found out that the girl was attacked while taking a common shortcut to meet with her boyfriend. Soon afterwards, the girl's father sent Zarachi a letter of thanks for helping his daughter and offered him a reward which Zarachi turned down. So it was really interesting that real life encroached on a movie, and that's how he made the movie, is through this experience. Just a couple more before we finish off this episode. So the film was submitted to the Motion Picture Association of America several times. It was originally rejected due to violence through the MPAA, and they didn't just specifically tell which part of the movie was actually extremely violent. They didn't pass it and should be trimmed. The film finally passed after Mir Zarachi had removed all references to anal rape. So I'm guessing at one stage when we see her being raped, when she's laying, you know, face down. I'm guessing that was the part of the movie which was, you know, they had to remove that part, but they don't know, they couldn't tell exactly which part it was. So I'm guessing that was the scene. And just one final one before we finish up, and this is directly from the woman who actually plays Jennifer in the movie, Camille Keaton. So Camille Keaton said in 2019 that she doesn't feel this film or those like it are misogynistic at all. As some have claimed, she said the first film was inspired by true events after Mia Zarachi rescued a woman who had been raped. So I don't think it's exploitative, it's empowering to women. That's what I love about Mia's work. It doesn't glamorize anything, and even the grittiness of the cinematography shows the tones of what happened. Statistics show that in the United States, 1 in 5 women have been raped. So the truth is that it's a very real and worldwide issue. Most of us know someone who has been affected. When a movie takes on a subject like this, I think it's very brave. She added that the censorship of the film is hypocrisy. We can go on the internet right now and see porn, which children can easily access, but we can't show a portrayal, i.e. it's not really happening, of something or someone being raped, which is a real issue. I believe art can wake people up, especially something that makes a statement. So really it shows you that this woman who is portrayed in this movie is just showing you that, you know, this is art for art's sake, but it's addressing a very important issue. And I think that's something we all need to take away from this movie, is the fact that it's a very real issue in the world right now. It may be 2022, but these things do still happen. It hasn't gone away over time. It's still very, very prevalent today as it was back then. And it's something that even the actress can address in a way of saying that this is art, but it really shows you that this is making a statement. So absolutely applauds to her. But anyway, thank you very much once again for coming to visit me at the Horror Crypt podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I hope you're enjoying all the episodes that I do. Remember, you can follow me on Facebook at Horror Crypt Oz. You can come and send me a direct message at horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. And remember, once a month, you'll find me at YouTube at the Horror Crypt podcast. In saying that, I hope to see you again next week. And until then, I'll creep you later.